Blog Talk Radio.
God damn, man, what the fuck happened? I'll tell you what happened. Blog Talk Radio shit the bed, man. Yesterday, just kaplooey, stopped working. But it looks like everything is okay, or at least they say everything is okay, today. That doesn't happen often. In the history of the show, maybe two or three times it happened where they shit the bed. Yesterday was the first time they shit the bed completely. I have to say, yesterday's show felt weird because we didn't do it live. And I've concluded I absolutely, positively, 100% prefer doing shows live. Because when you're not live, like, I can sense the fact that as I'm doing the show, I'm not connecting with an audience. Like, yesterday when I had to do the show, it wasn't the same level of, like, locked-in-ness. Because I knew that at that moment, the stuff I was saying was not piercing into other people's brains. So it's almost like, you know, I'm kind of talking to myself right now, and that's weird. That's not true, because later on it gets uploaded and a lot of people watch it, but at the time it's like I'm fucking talking to myself and this is strange. But see, right now I'm not talking to myself, so it feels better. Am I making any sense? I hope I'm making sense. But it's great to be back with a live show, that one day that we missed. Let me tell you what you guys have to look forward to today. We're going to kick it off with some serious stuff here, some serious stuff coming out of Ferguson and what the police department is doing. And how they indeed are acting like criminals. The police are acting like criminals. Police in Ferguson acting like criminals? No, no way. Then as we move along here, oh no. Jared Fogel, the subway guy. You know you heard the story. You don't even need me to say it, do you? He's into little kids. He's a criminal. All right, we'll discuss that too. Terrible story. Mike Huckabee speaks to Wolf Blitzer about what exactly Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was in favor of. Who would know better than Mike Huckabee? And later on in the show, Brian Fisher has a brilliant new argument as to why you can't criticize fundamentalist Christians. And also, we have some good news. Women are now allowed in the Navy SEALs. Now, I'll explain to you why this is fantastic news, and I'll give you all the details of that. And, I don't think there's really a counter-argument once you hear it, so we'll discuss that. And also, e-cigarettes, are they good for you, bad for you, why not? We have a new study on that issue and much, much more, so let's kick it off here. And we'll start with Ferguson. The Huffington Post is reporting on an incredible situation developing in Ferguson, Missouri. They say, quote, a year ago, after 18-year-old Michael Brown was killed by Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson, police responded to even peaceful daytime protests in the St. Louis suburb by deploying attack dogs and tactical vehicles, pointing sniper rifles at peaceful protesters, arresting people for simply standing still on public sidewalks, flooding demonstrators with tear gas, often without warning, and shooting them with beanbags, wooden pellets, and balls filled with pepper spray. A year later, St. Louis authorities have decided they're not done with protesters quite yet. Lawyers representing the interests of those arrested in Ferguson last August say St. Louis County authorities have sent out hundreds of summonses to individuals swept up by police a year ago because the state prosecuting attorney refused to take many of the cases, and the city of Ferguson has not pursued charges in others. The ordinance violation charges have come from the St. Louis County Councilor, the very same entity that defends the St. Louis County Police Department's actions in civil rights lawsuits. They're just charging everybody who didn't get charged. Now, that last sentence, everything I just gave you there, this is from the article, and that last sentence is not me, that's in the article. They say, quote, they're just charging everybody who didn't get charged. So what are they doing here? they're sending a message. They're sending a message to protesters in Ferguson. You don't have First Amendment rights. You're not protected by the Constitution. Every single person that we swept up when we did these broad arrests, all of you are getting charged. Now, this is a political move, man. Make no mistake about it, because they don't want future protests. They want everybody, you people, the rabble, know your place, sit down and shut up. You can't be disrupting the establishment here. We got something good going on with the way this works. We shake you down. We get money from you. We are an invading army in the black community. We arrest people for nonviolent drug crimes. This is the way it works, man. Don't try to change it. So they're doing that, but what should be done in response? Because there's a very important point to make here. If Obama has balls, what he should do is say, oh, okay, so you want to play that game? So you can play that game. And you crack down on the police department. Now, we already know there was a report that came out of the Ferguson Police Department. And we already know there's rampant abuse and racism and craziness that occurs there on a daily basis. So if President Obama has balls, he reads this story, he gets this report that state prosecutors said they don't want to prosecute, but they decided to prosecute the peaceful protesters anyway. And he says, all right, well, now we're going to go to work. Now I'm going to roll up my sleeves, and now I'm going to absolutely, positively, 100% take down that police department until they know that their job is to uphold the law and serve and protect the people. I love how we've forgotten that in many places in America. When it says on the side of the cop car to serve and protect, that's supposed to be for the community, for the people, for Americans. Yes, including black Americans. So this is, I mean, in all seriousness, this is an egregious story. This should be, you know, leading news on all the different major news organizations or in, you know, the different press outlets, whether it's CNN, MSNBC, Fox News. Don't make me laugh. But it's not. It's not, and that's really depressing because how the fuck are we supposed to shine a light on this and get change if we're not shining a light on it? You got to shine a light on it, man. They're telling people in Ferguson, this move, make no mistake about it, peaceful protesters getting arrested and they're charging them with bullshit charges. They're doing that to silence them. They're doing that to shut them up. They're doing that to say, hey, Black Lives Matter, stay the fuck out. But you shouldn't stay the fuck out. You should go in more now. Look, anytime they try to censor you or shut you down in realms like this, that's when you spit in their eye and say, try me, bitch, and you double down. This is the same thing, remember I said it recently when it came to the atheist blogger, the secular bloggers, I should say, getting hacked to death in Bangladesh. You know what the response is? Everybody stands up to the Islamists and says, you can't get all of us, bitch. You can't get all of us, so we're all going to start secular blogs. How you like them apples? We're all going to fly a flag that says, you know, where with the secular bloggers? How you like that? You like that? Try and get us all. Try to machete us all. See how far you get. Same thing here. Draw a line in the sand. Oh, you're going to crack down on peaceful protesters? We're going to crack down on you. Knock, knock, bitch. Guess who's there? The American people. And we're coming for our rights back. All right. Man, it's so upsetting because you know what? Like, I get the sense that there are people in the different police departments that they don't even know the Constitution. They don't even know the rights that the people have. Like, they've been given this position of authority. They're police officers. They have a badge. They have a responsibility. And they walk around. They don't know the Constitution. They don't know that you really do have a right to peacefully protest. And that's the way a free country works. That's the way free speech works. I don't think they know. But if they do know and they don't care, I mean, that's probably even worse. But, I mean, maybe there's some people who know, but they do certainly not care. So it's a mix of the worst of all worlds. Either they don't know or they know and they don't care. But either way, that's unacceptable, man. I would fucking clean house. If I'm Obama, like I said, I'm rolling up my sleeves and I'm saying, okay, you guys want to play that? Oh, look, I found a laundry list of problems that you guys had in the year 1998, the police department. False accusations, charges of racism and abuse against the officers. Oh, look, we just happened to bring it to federal court. Oh, look, we won. Oh, look, you just lost all your funding, Ferguson Police Department. You sure you want to keep bringing cases against peaceful protesters? This is how you play the game, man, but you have to want to play the game. You know who would really fucking crack skulls over this, man? I mean, you could just imagine. If President Obama right now was FDR, he would have already brought the lawsuits against him. If Obama right now was Lyndon Johnson, he would have brought the law. See, Lyndon Johnson actually gets a bum rap for Vietnam because he sucked on Vietnam. He increased Vietnam, and it was ridiculous. It was just stupid to do that. So he was horrible on foreign policy. But what a lot of people don't realize is that Lyndon B. Johnson was actually significantly more liberal than even JFK on social policy. Lyndon B. Johnson was the one who signed the Civil Rights Act. Lyndon B. Johnson was the one who signed the Voting Rights Act. Lyndon B. Johnson was the one who did the war on poverty. Lyndon B. Johnson would crack fucking skulls of his Republican opponents. So if it was Lyndon Johnson in there right now and he saw some shit like this going, he'd be like, okay, what are you going to do? You're going to charge peaceful protesters. That's adorable. You're done. Come on, Obama. What are you doing, man? Do yourself a favor. Look down, get your shaft up, and see if you got some balls there. If you have two testicles that are sitting there, use them. Did I just explain to President Obama where his balls are? Oh, that's great. I think I'm going to use that more often now. All right, let's move on to, the sad. So I got a lot of sad stuff today. We're all over the map today, but this is really sad. Subway's longtime spokesman, Jared Fogle, has admitted to various sex crimes with minors. The Associated Press reports on this. They say, quote, he traveled to pay for sex acts with minors while he stayed in upscale hotels and received child pornography that he knew had been secretly produced by the former director of his charitable foundation. The allegations involve at least 12 minors who appeared in pornography and two who participated in sex acts. On November 3, 2012, Fogle allegedly paid a 17-year-old girl who he had found online to engage in sex acts while he was staying at the Plaza Hotel in New York City. Fogle texted the girl and offered to pay her a fee if she could find him another underage girl to pay for sex acts. Now, listen to how bad this gets as we continue here. Hold your judgment. Wait until the end. A waterfall more is coming. They say during these discussions, Fogle stated that he would accept a 16-year-old girl while stating that the younger the girl, the better. Between 2011 and 2013, Fogle also repeatedly sent text messages to other escorts, soliciting them to provide him with access to minors as young as 14 to 15 years old. All right, so notice how we're going down in age here. At first it was 17, and in some states 17 is legal. And in all seriousness, 17, I look at 17 and I go, yeah, that should be legal. 16, now you're getting more borderline. Now, again, I've said all along, I always thought 16 should be the legal age for everything. So it's still borderline, but then you get to 14 and 15 and I go, I'm out. So I tap out and I say, no, now it's a crime, now this isn't right. But it gets even worse. They say, Fogle received from Taylor, that's the guy who ran his charity, multiple images and videos, some of which were taken by a video camera hidden in a clock radio that filmed children changing clothes or bathing. Some were taken in buildings where Taylor lived. Taylor allegedly obtained sexually explicit images taken by others outside the U.S., including videos of children around age 6, and shared them with Fogle. Fogle faces one count of traveling to engage in illicit sexual conduct with a minor and one count of distribution and receipt of child pornography. Okay, so let's break this down here. Like I said, when you start talking about 17 years old, don't care. In fact, like I said, I'll argue that that should be legal. 16, you lose some people, but again, for me, 16, I still think 16 and up should be legal for everything, in my opinion. When you get to 15 and 14, I'm out. Now I think you're a criminal. When you get to 6, oh my God, lock this guy up and throw away the fucking key. No. That's horrendous. What are you doing, man? Oh my God. Six-year-olds. I don't know what else to say about this story other than, yeah, he deserves a very, very long prison sentence. The guy who ran his charity deserves a very long prison sentence. Now, I didn't see all the details in this particular article from the Associated Press. But if I'm not mistaken, I think there are other articles that talk about how the guy who ran his charity also was involved in even more terrible stuff. And bottom line, I have no sympathy for stuff like this. He deserves a long prison sentence, and he deserves what he has coming to him. I fought it, and I fought it, and I fought it, and I successfully got through that segment without making a $5 foot-long joke. Oh, I'm bad for even bringing it up now, man. I shouldn't have even brought it up now. Totally inappropriate. We're talking about fucking serious charges. $5 foot-long. Ridiculous name. All right, next. Here we go. Mike Huckabee. Oh, where the fuck's my clip? Oh, there it is. Sorry. Hashtag professional, bitch. Mike Huckabee spoke to Wolf Blitzer, and he's going to tell us what the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. thinks about the Black Lives Matter movement.
Talk about Hillary Clinton for a moment. There's a video of her meeting with some Black Lives Matter protesters. We heard her tell the protesters they're going to need to come together to demand change, but they need to change laws because she says you're not going to be able to change everyone's heart. Do you agree with her on this?
You know, I've dealt with race issues my whole life, and quite frankly, I think it's more of a sin problem than a skin problem. There are injustices in our culture. I fought them as a governor. Before that, 35 years ago, I fought them as a pastor when I integrated an all-white church and did so against death threats. So I understand how people have great passions, but I also understand that the way you begin to resolve them is you do it by loving people and treating people with dignity and respect. And you don't do it by magnifying the problems. You do it by really magnifying the solutions. And when I hear people, you know, scream Black Lives Matter, I'm thinking, of course they do. But all lives matter. It's not that any life matters more than another. That's the whole message I think that Dr. King tried to present. And I think he'd be appalled by the notion that we're elevating some lives above others.
Because who would know better what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. would think than Mike Huckabee? Mike Huckabee. Now, what a joke. Dude, you don't speak for him. You know you don't speak for him. And you're super, super far away from him on the political spectrum. People forget. It's not just that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was a civil rights activist and he was fighting on the race front. He also was engaged in a fight for workers. I mean, he was killed at a union rally, a workers' rally. Here's a guy who was fighting for a living wage for everybody. He has this great quote about how the worst injustice of all injustice is injustice in a healthcare system. So he was for a universal healthcare system. He was totally opposed to the Vietnam War. He was anti-war. So, Mike, sit down and zip it, because you're wrong. You don't know. You don't know what the fuck he thinks. Again, if you go through his history, it's clear he's a progressive guy. He's a liberal guy. I love how now it's like, since he's dead and gone, you have people on the Republican side trying to steal his legacy. You know, they'll put up quotes about how, see, he was in favor of black people being responsible. They'll put up quotes about that, and they're like, aha, we got the liberals. As if the liberals were like, we are actively in favor of black people being irresponsible. Well, of course people are pro-responsibility. Who's anti-responsibility? But the idea is, while he did talk about, hey, we need to get our values straight at the family level and at the individual level, he also was fighting against systemic issues, issues that Mike Huckabee says, nope, they don't exist, don't talk about them. Or as he just said right there, talking about the problem is the problem. That's the argument he's making. But Mike, that's not the problem. That's like when people say, when you talk about racism, that's racist. But no, that's not racist. You're talking about racism to try to fix it, to try to come up with solutions. You're addressing a problem. You can't address a problem if you don't talk about it. See, again, man, Mike Huckabee, he's got his head buried up his ass, and he flipped the issue with All Lives Matter and Black Lives Matter on its head. He's like, well, of course Black Lives Matter, but all lives matter. No, it's of course all lives matter. That's what the Black Lives Matter people say. Of course all lives matter, but Black Lives Matter too. And the reason they're saying that is because as it exists right now, apparently in the eyes of the system, Black Lives Matter less. So when they say Black Lives Matter, what they're trying to do is get it to the equal playing field as white lives. That's why they get angry when people fire back after they say Black Lives Matter. When somebody says all lives matter, they get angry because that's essentially the same thing as saying when they say, hey, we should end discrimination against blacks. It's like the other side saying, well, you should end discrimination against whites, too. You should end discrimination against all people. But all people aren't being discriminated against. If they were, of course that would be the message. Of course that would be the main thing they say. And of course they're on the page of nobody being discriminated against. But they're already at a disadvantage in the system. So when they say Black Lives Matter, they're saying we matter, too. We matter as well. It's not a swipe at the all people. How ridiculous is that? But see, that's the thing. People get their feels up. I just came up with this new term to discuss it today. Whenever people immediately reject when they hear, you know, the term Black Lives Matter, oh my God, I can't believe they said that. That's just their feels. Their feels are getting up. Like, I am going to read into what you said, and I'm going to interpret that as you saying, I hate white people, or all lives don't matter. No, of course they think all lives matter, but they're saying that right now we are at a disadvantage, and in the eyes of the system, we don't matter as much, so we're just trying to get back on that equal playing field. And again, what's the overriding fact here, and the most important thing? Look at what most of the Black Lives Matter movement is trying to get here. Now, are there some elements of the Black Lives Matter movement that I disagree with? Of course. I think I disagree with some on tactics, for sure. But the overall message of the movement and the policies that they're pushing for, what are they? Well, they want to end the drug war. We've spoken about this time and time again. The statistics show it is a racist drug war. When black people and white people use drugs at a similar rate, but black people get arrested four times more often for it, how do you explain that? How do you describe that? The only different factor is race. So, of course, black people are targeted more on that front. So they want to end the drug war, which makes perfect sense. That's a good policy change, and it takes away the ability or part of the ability of cops to basically have open season on cracking down on black people and targeting on them specifically. You should have special prosecutors for police abuse, so whenever a cop does a crime, you don't go to his buddy and tell his buddy you have to prosecute him because he's not going to do it. We've seen it time and time again. You need special prosecutors for that. That's another thing they want. They want community policing, programs that get people from the community to get a job at the police department, and then they know the people they're policing, so they're more likely to not view them as less than human. That's very important as well. Body cameras for everybody, all cops in America, because statistics show that when they wear body cameras, while it's not foolproof, there's of course still going to be problems. The statistics do show that it does limit the abuse. It does make it so that more officers are likely to say, I know I'm on camera, I better behave. So this is what Black Lives Matter is about. And on those fronts, the things I just outlined right there, is it fair to say that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. would likely be in favor of those things? Yes, absolutely. Okay. Let's take a break, Skis, and when we come back, ISIS beheads an antiquity scholar, or an archaeologist in Syria, and it's just terrible, so we'll discuss that. Brian Fisher has a brilliant new argument that he's going to use to stop criticism of fundamentalist Christians. Oh, how sad is he, man? He's so sad. Wait until you hear this argument. I love how obviously not true it is. Like, when somebody makes an argument, and it's almost like you know that the argument wasn't even made with the thought in mind of it being true. Oh my God, I find that hilarious. So he's back in the show. And then later on, we have, in Georgia, you have a store owner that decided to take down the Confederate flag. Which is a good idea. Apparently he cares about the message it sends out there. He cares about racism until you hear about what flag he replaces it with. And then, like I said, we got an awesome e-cigarette study. Do e-cigarettes work? Not work? Why not? And what are the benefits and what are the downsides? We'll discuss all that. Got some new research to go over. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Blog Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show. ISIS beheaded an antiquities scholar and archaeologist in Syria. They did it in the ancient and historical city of Palmyra, or Palmyra, forgive me, I still don't know how to pronounce it. Now, that place is known for its historical ruins. And they hung this guy's body on a column in the main square. Huffington Post reports on this. The researcher Khalid Asaid had been detained and interrogated for over a month by the ultra-radical Sunni Muslim militants. He was known for several scholarly works published in international archaeological journals on Palmyra. He also worked over the past few decades with U.S., French, German, and Swiss archaeological missions on excavations and research in Palmyra's famed 2,000-year-old ruins, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, including Roman tombs. Before the city's capture by the Islamic State, Syrian officials said they moved hundreds of ancient statues to safe locations out of the concern they would be destroyed by the militants. Seems to be a good concern. In June, the Islamic State did blow up two ancient shrines in Palmyra that were not part of its Roman-era structures, but which the militants regarded as pagan and sacrilegious. Okay, so you know why they did this, right? They're quite literally anti-knowledge, anti-education. I find it hilarious when there's a group of people that are willing to stand up and put their hands in the air and say, yes, I am a dumbass. I am a fuckhead. I don't give a shit about facts. I don't give a shit about evidence. I don't care about truth. What's so funny is that a lot of these people will say, oh, yes, Islam is the truth, and specifically our interpretation of Islam is the truth. But then, on the other hand, they'll do stuff like this, and they'll admit, like, no, I actually don't care about truth. All this guy's doing is uncovering the facts about ancient history, and he's involved directly with the artifacts. He's an archaeologist. They're so offended by that they're like, ah, off with his head. But why would you be offended by that? Now, they also go on to admit in a different article on this that he wouldn't give up the location of other excavation points or something like that. So that's why they killed him. Now, we don't know for sure, but that might have something to do with it. And also, there's this weird cognitive dissonance or disagreement within the people who are part of ISIS on this. They did a video recently where they were destroying ancient artifacts, and they were like, yay, we hate facts. But then also there are allegations that seem credible that while they destroy some of the artifacts, what else do? They take other ones and they sell it on the black market. And they're like, give me money, 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 money. We need to expand the caliphate. We're allowed to do this to expand the caliphate. Money, 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 money. So not only are they making money through oil fields that they've taken over, they're allegedly also making money off of these ancient artifacts that on the one hand they like because they're making money off them, but on the other hand they're like, ah, history needs to conform exactly what our beliefs are, so destroy it all. And let's be clear, this is exactly what the Nazis did. And this isn't, hey, you're invoking Godwin's law, I think that's what it's called, the fake internet rule where like anytime you bring up Nazis, you're automatically wrong. No, but that's true. That's what the Nazis did. That's what the communists did. All authoritarian regimes do this. And the reason why they do it is because they're so insecure in their own beliefs and their own ideology that they have to destroy all the actual history, and they have to try to make the history conform to what their beliefs are. So they try to shape the past and mold the past to be to be exactly like them and to be the version of the truth that they create, or in other words, just not the truth. They want to tend like all along, oh yes, all along ISIS was in control, all along fundamentalist Islam was number one. No need to look at any contributions to history or society from any other belief systems or religions or ideologies. You don't need to look at socialism, you don't need to look at Christianity, you don't need to look at the Roman Empire, quite literally in this case. Don't worry about any of that. They're pagan, they're heathens, they're infidels, they're wrong by definition. So destroy all that and, oh my God, heap all the praise on me and tell me I'm great and tell me my ideology was responsible for all the good in the world. See, that's the thing. At their core, they're little bitches. No, that's what it is. See, adults can do what? Adults can, I can look at history and I can say, okay, I don't agree with those people, but they added to civilization through A, B, and C. I can do that because I'm not a stupid person. I have balance. I can evaluate evidence on its own merit, and I can take a nuanced view of the world. These guys can't do that. They're incapable of doing that. It's either I have to be 100% right about everything and nobody else can be good about anything, so kill everybody who disagrees with us, get rid of history, and pretend like history all along was only, you know, for us, the right people, the brilliant people, the ideologically pure people. Again, exactly what the Nazis did. Did you know, I think it was Goebbels, who, one of Hitler's right-hand men, who was actually in the process of creating a Nazi religion. Like, that was the whole idea behind it. Hitler would be, like, the deity, and then you'd have, like, the saints, including Goebbels himself and Himmler and the other fucking idiots. And then, you know, as time went by, his idea was we got to, like, phase out Christianity. Over 90% of Nazi Germany was Christian, by the way. But the idea from Goebbels was, over time, you, like, phase out Christianity, and you make this new religion with Hitler as the god based on what's called German mysticism, which is the idea that, you know, there was a time in the past when the Germanic people were the best in the world, blonde-haired, blue eyes, chiseled, tall, and the Jews were the evil ones, and anybody who's not purely of Aryan blood, which is made up, oh, then they're bad and they're wrong, and society was perfect back then, and they were trying to create that society again today and set up a new religion with Hitler and the Nazis as, you know, the core of it. So, and again, the parallel is perfect to ISIS. Oh, we need to set up the new caliphate, and, you know, our religion is right, and our belief system is right, so destroy history that says anything to the opposite, because we're insecure little pricks, and we can't balance history, and we're not nuanced. So there you have it, man. I don't hesitate for a fucking split second to call these guys barbarians, to call these guys savages, because that is what they are. That's exactly what they are. They are fundamentalist, religious pricks with their heads up their ass, and they behead good people doing hard work in archaeology to try to further our understanding of history. When you have to go after the people that are intelligent and are seeking only for knowledge, by definition, you are wrong, and in this case, quite literally, evil. Okay. All right, next. Brian Fisher, Brian Fisher has a brilliant new argument that he's going to use to attempt to stop criticism of himself and other fundamentalist Christians. Let's watch.
My question is this. If homosexuals believe that they're born that way and don't have a choice, and me being a Christian, I believe that I was born a Christian because I believe that God created me in his image. That means that I didn't have a choice to be Christian. Then how come I have fewer rights or my rights aren't as important as a homosexual who believes that they're born that way?
Well, you know, and it's interesting that you bring that up, Terry, and I think it's a good argument. You can use it with almost anything if you're in an argument with somebody who is arguing on behalf of the homosexual agenda and say, I didn't choose this, I wouldn't choose to live like this, who would choose to live like this, I was born this way. Well, I the way I am, I was born this way. And, you know, you think about it, Terry, who would choose at this time in our nation's history to be a Christian? You're ridiculed, you're mocked, you're made fun of, you get fired. I mean, we're getting ready to fire a county clerk in Kentucky for being a Christian. Fire chief in Atlanta got fired for being a Christian. I mean, who would choose a lifestyle where you are the unending subject of ridicule, mockery, and contempt by liberals in society, by elites, by professors, on the media, by politicians? Who's going to choose that?
So first of all, no, it's not true that, oh my God, Christians were victims, were persecuted, were so under attack in America. By who? Bill Maher, me, TYT, Sam Harris. I'm out. You guys got anybody else? Is anybody on CNN mocking them? Is anybody on MSNBC mocking them? Is anybody on Fox News mocking them? Oh, certainly not. They will defend them forever. No, so what the fuck are you talking about? You guys make up over 70% of the population. You control everything. You're the overwhelming majority in Congress and at this state government level, too, all around the U.S. Fuck you complaining about, son? What? Oh, because you can no longer take away the rights of gay people to not marry? That's what gets you angry? See, that's the thing. He thinks it's his right to take away the rights of others. That's part of his Christianity is, I get to take away everybody's rights. But no, that's not part of your Christianity. That can't be part of your Christianity in a secular country, which is what we are. So first things first, he's just wrong about that, that they're persecuted and they're under attack, only by me. And I'm going to continue to do that, by the way. But did you get the overall argument there? He's saying, well, look, the gays say that being gay is a choice. Well, I say Christianity, or I'm sorry, the gays say that being gay is not a choice. There you go. Accuracy. And I say that being Christian is not a choice. I was born this way. I was born this way. But that's not true, because Christianity is a religion and an ideology, and you can change that with education, whereas homosexuality is a sexual orientation, which is biological. You cannot change that. Totally different things. They're totally different things. But see, he's desperate. So essentially he's doing, I know what you are, but what am I? He's doing that old argument. Oh, yeah, you're going to use that argument? Well, I'm going to use it too. Ha. Yeah, but when we say it makes sense, when you say it doesn't make sense, because you flipped it. Of course you can change your mind on an ideology, you know, given enough time and enough information, and if you actually give a shit about the truth, sure you can evolve. Doesn't matter how hard you try. If you're a gay person and you're trying hard not to be gay, you know, you can't just sit there and say, okay, I'm going to will myself to want to fuck women even though I like guys. I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. But you don't want to. No matter how hard you try, you don't want to. But see, that's the thing. With Brian Fisher, I'll tell you the way he thinks about it. He thinks homosexuality can just be defined as the act itself. So the act of gay sex. The act of doing some sort of sexual act with somebody of the same gender. And in his mind, he's thinking, well, obviously you can abstain from doing that, even if you're attracted to people of the same sex. So it is a choice because you're abstaining from actually doing the act. But you're missing the point, Bri. The point is the drive, the urge cannot be changed. If you're gay and you're attracted to the same sex, doesn't matter how hard you try to will yourself out of it, ain't going to work. That's like, you know, anybody listening to the show knows my sexual preferences because I've spoken about it on air, but that's like me trying to will myself to not be attracted to a woman that has an ass like Kim Kardashian or old school Jennifer Lopez. I'm not. I can't. My monkey brain takes over, and I'm like, yes, yes, mommy, hold me. It just happens. It is what it is. That's the nature of a sex drive. But then that gets to the point we always talk about with Brian Fisher, which is, dude, that's how he feels. We know that's how he feels. Why do you think it is he talks about it so much, man? And we've covered the studies on the show. Anybody who's anti-gay and really over the top about it and vocal about it, as if to be like, I'm not gay. I don't like those gays. They're bad, they're bad, they're bad. Usually those people are battling similar feelings. As Dan Savage says, he's externalizing an internal struggle. See, in his mind, he thinks, well, everybody else must fight these same urges, so therefore I'm going to talk about gayness as if it's just a choice. And as if, like, well, everybody wants to fuck the same sex, but you got to fight that urge, man. That's why he talks about it in this way. But the reality is, Brian, that's not true. We don't all feel that way. We don't all want to have sex with you know, the same gender. That's just you. And you're just going to live a life of quiet desperation, knowing what he wants to do, but thinking that it's evil and wrong and immoral because he drank the Kool-Aid of a fundamentalist interpretation of Christianity. And the rest of us are just going to watch him spew his hate-filled bigotry until the day he dies, and we're going to continue to mock him for it, because these ideas are dangerous, and they should be fought against. By the way, like I said, I have that new theory, too, for racists. The reason why I think, like, if you look at some fucking hick-ass dude in Mississippi, no teeth, flies the Confederate flag, fat gut, all that stuff, I'm starting to believe that one of the main reasons why a lot of those guys are racist is that they have an inferiority complex when they look at black people. So how do they, you know, lash out? They go, oh, blacks are inferior. They're saying that because they're afraid that they're inferior. I mean, come on, man. A hick in the backwoods of Mississippi doesn't look at Kobe Bryant or LeBron James and go, fuck, I wish I had what that guy had. Of course they do. Of course they do. So it's the same externalizing the internal struggle. I really think that holds true, man. I really do. All right, next. Man, I can go on and on and on here, baby. All right, we'll do one more or two more before we take a break. Probably one more. We'll see how it goes. A Washington State University team of bioanthropologists are theorizing that humans first use marijuana for medicine rather than getting high, and then later on there was a ritual that came about as a result of that. So let me give you some more from this piece here, Raw Story Reports. The group of scientists studied one of the last remaining indigenous hunter-gatherer tribes. Did I lose you guys there? Take a look here. No, it appears like everything's there. I don't know. I heard a weird thing in my ear. Anyway, let's try that again. Smooth, baby. Smooth operator. The group of scientists studied one of the last remaining indigenous hunter-gatherer tribes, the nomadic Aka people of Africa's Congo Basin. The Aka, who some people call pygmies, are among the world's heaviest pot smokers. I didn't know this. The team found that the Aka's heavy cannabis use is a means of self-medicating for an otherwise deadly group infestation of intestinal worms. However, the tribe members themselves will tell you that they use the drug for its psychoactive qualities. Anthropologist Barry Hewlett studied the Aka in the 1970s and wrote in 1977 that the tribe's people smoke cannabis to increase their courage on a hunt, dance better, increase their vital force, whatever that means, or to increase their work capacity when working for Europeans or village people. The study found the same and theorized that the Aka are unconsciously self-medicating far back in their history. The tribe's people use cannabis as medicine, but have come over time to ritualize and enjoy the high. Psychologist Charles P. Mueller wrote that drug use is as common to humans as the desires for, get this, food,
shelter, and sex. It is, he said, a stable and widespread behavior in its own right. One psychologist, Ronald K. Siegel, calls the will to intoxicate oneself humanity's fourth drive. Damn. Hagen said that humans and the plants they use to get high have co-evolved with humans selecting plants to more closely meet their needs. This could explain, he said, why the opium poppy, marijuana, tobacco, and other plants contain chemicals that mimic the actions of human brain chemicals like serotonin, dopamine, and adrenaline. Okay, so I know that's long, but bear with me here. Let me break that down for you. What they're saying is, up until this point in history, we kind of have looked at drug use as this vice that anybody who does it needs to fight the urge and you shouldn't want to alter your consciousness in any way, shape, or form. But now this new idea that they're discovering is, well, wait a second, this is really prevalent even going back to hunter-gatherer tribes. And the idea is perhaps it's actually natural to use it and it's a normal human drive. So in other words, they're now looking at use of intoxicating substances as akin to, like they said, the fourth drive. So along with like eating and sleeping and breathing and all that stuff, they say, well, yeah, it's so getting high is also a very normal thing, very natural thing, and it's not bad, it's not wrong. Now, they make the distinction in the article, and I think it's smart too. There's a difference between a drug user and a drug abuser. Of course, drug abuse is not natural, and it's not good. That's overusing any substance to the point where it affects you in such a negative way that, you know, your life collapses around you, you can't go to work, you can't, you know, do normal human things. That's a problem. But as Dr. Carl Hart has said in the past, it's 80 to 90% of drug users all around the world are moderate, normal drug users. They're people who do drugs, they go to work, and they go about their business, and they live a normal life, no different than somebody who drinks some coffee in the morning, that's a drug, or takes a Xanax when they have a panic attack, that's a drug, or has a couple beers at night when they're watching TV, that's a drug. Not only do we not live in a drug-free society, we wouldn't want to live in a drug-free society, because the state of being permanently sober is not something that's good for human beings. It's, in fact, we've spoken about this before, too. In nature, you know, you have animals that sometimes pick certain berries and eat the berries because it gives them a high. We spoke about how there was a study recently where they gave monkeys alcohol, and they fucking loved it, and they kept drinking the alcohol. So this is not, like, this idea that it's some unnatural state that you should fight off, and oh my God, you should never want to change your consciousness, sobriety needs to be the case 100% of the time. That's, if anything, more unnatural. And it makes perfect sense that, as they say here, it could have started with medicinal use and medicinal use alone, but then it blossomed into something they do on a fairly regular basis, and there's a ritual around it. You know, and we've seen this with Native American tribes, too, with how they used peyote, right? That's something that was common. There are rituals around it. There are rites of passage that are built around it. These are all things that, far from being bad for human beings, they're kind of arguing, and I would certainly argue that they're good, which is why the drug war and prohibition on drugs, in many ways, is actually a war on human nature, too. And it's a useful tool of the establishment to keep down certain communities that they don't want getting too uppity, if you know what I'm saying. And unfortunately, that's the result. That's why there's that new book out. It's not really new anymore, but the book, The New Jim Crow, which outlines the fact that the drug war basically is the new Jim Crow. The drug war basically is the implementation of this idea that there should be second-class citizens, not everybody is equal, and you should police certain communities way more than you police other communities, because it's a tool of social control. So very interesting study from Washington State, the Washington State University team of bioanthropologists. And, of course, it will not be discussed in the mainstream media, and they'll act like that's not true, and we should all continue to hate drugs, bash drugs, to lock people up who take drugs, so on and so forth. Well, we shouldn't. I think I'm on the record. All right, now, I believe... Yeah, I'm going to take a break now, a little bit of an early break here. And then when we come back, I got a bunch of stuff in the final block for you. We have... A business in Georgia took down the Confederate flag, and I can't wait to tell you what it was replaced with. Navy SEALs, the Navy SEALs are now allowing in women. We'll discuss why that's an awesome thing. And, sweet Jesus, we're living in the future, dude. They have lab-grown brains now. They can grow a fucking brain in a lab. I don't even know how that's fucking theoretically possible. Sometimes I read these stories and I'm like, come on. That's not even theoretically possible. Who came up with the idea of like, well, all you got to do is do this and then do that and then do this and then boom, it'll work. Oh, and by the way, where did they get the materials to do it? Stem cells. Every story, there's a little pot shot at the right wing in there because the right wing is just somehow wrong about everything. All right, so we'll talk about that and much, much more. Don't go anywhere. Stay right there. Block Talk Radio, Secular Talk Radio, Kyle Klinsky Show. We'll be right back. All right, we're back, y'all. We're back. Shut her up, bro. Shut her the fuck up.
The owner of an eclectic art gallery, not even sure exactly what that means, in Macon, Georgia, decided to step up and do the right thing, and he took down the Confederate flag that he usually flies outside of his business this week. Okay. Well done. You're far, far too late, but credit where credit is due. But, of course there's a but. Now, you were probably thinking, well, I mean, he's an eclectic art gallery owner. So he's got to be some kind of a liberal guy, right? Who owns an art gallery? Rush Limbaugh fans don't own art galleries, right? Well, I guess some do, because he took down his Confederate flag and he proceeded to replace it with a Nazi flag. Speechless. So his name is Anthony Harris. And the whole reason why we're even doing this segment, because it's just a dipshit in the middle of nowhere, who cares about him? Here's why we're doing this segment. His quote, he said, "I just want people to realize that it's a flag. Don't get so much in an uproar about it. It's good to have a conversation about it. It's good to address it. But there's no need to want to kill someone over it." Killing you, dude. Nobody's killing you. But you are flying a Nazi flag. That symbolizes you would like to kill people, whether or not you realize it. See, this is the point. I've actually had debates on Twitter over this since the whole Confederate flag debate a few months ago when it came down from state houses, finally, where some people now have moved the goalposts in the argument to, well, flags don't even mean anything necessarily. It's just a flag. That's all it is. It's some colors. It's like a drawing. It's a painting on a flagpole. That's all it is. Flags don't inherently mean anything. It's just a flag. No, but they do mean something. Now, there was a time when the swastika was not just for Nazis. Predates Nazis. It used to be, it's an ancient symbol that had nothing to do with Nazism back in the day. But post-World War II, you lost that fight. That ship has sailed. That now is the Nazi flag. By the same token, yeah, the Confederate flag means what it means now. There's no, you know, various interpretations. Heritage, not hate. But the heritage to do what? The whole point of the Confederacy was we are seceding because the North doesn't want us to keep our slaves. So let's secede and have a heritage of slave owning and overt, blatant, in-your-face racism. So saying heritage, not hate, it just doesn't make any sense. Because the heritage, by definition, is hate. It's like saying hate, not hate. So that doesn't add up. I'm just trying to get through to people. Now, understand, man, is there a broader conversation to be had here about symbols and what they mean? Yes. So are there areas where it is vital and necessary that we have multiple interpretations of different symbols? So, for example, if you take religions, whether it's Christianity, whether it's Islam, or any other religion, the symbols of those religions can be tied to brutal, vicious atrocities because those religions have been responsible for brutal, vicious atrocities over the years. No doubt about that. But religion is amorphous enough where all of us have to hope that the liberal interpretations of those religions win out and there is a reformation that overtakes all the religions where they all basically want to act like secular humanists, even though they may call themselves a Christian or a Muslim or a Hindu or a Jew or whatever, right? So that's an area where I would argue we have to be more amorphous for the survival of humanity because you don't want fundamentalists in all their religions fucking up everything for everybody. So there is more room for interpretation, and you can cherry-pick good verses over bad verses, etc. Doesn't mean that any of the verses are right. They're all bullshit, in my opinion. But you want to pick the more liberal parts over the other parts. When it comes to the Nazi flag and the Confederate flag, doesn't represent multiple things. It's not like, well, you know, Himmler was a bad guy to some people, but to others, Himmler wasn't terrible. I mean, he had a wife and kids, am I right? Am I right? No. It's not just, hey, I'm flying a Nazi flag, but, and you think I'm a racist? You think I'm an anti-Semite? It's just a Nazi flag, bro. Why are you assuming shit? I'm not assuming anything. That is what it represents, period. End of discussion, end of conversation. And this guy goes on, by the way, to blame the media for shit. Blame the media for what, dude? You're the one that's flying the Confederate flag. You're the one that's flying the Nazi flag. You're the one that's acting the entire time like, me, a racist? Me, a bad person? No. No, they're not wrong for drawing logical conclusions based off of what you do. They're not wrong for saying 2 plus 2 equals 4. You're wrong for flying the shitty flags to begin with. So this is a point I want to get across to everybody, man. Some things are too far gone. You're not going to get that Nazi flag to mean something different. You're not going to get the Confederate flag to mean something different. It means what it means. It is extremism by definition. Let's acknowledge that and let's move forward and stop being a prick about it. Now, again, you're allowed to fly it because I believe in freedom of speech across the board and freedom of expression across the board. So I'm not saying the government should come in and force you to take it down. No, by all means, fly it away, fly it away. But just understand that people are going to be right and it is accurate to refer to you as a racist prick as a result of your actions. Bitch. All right, let's go to some gender issues. Fun. Huffington Post is reporting that women can now become Navy SEALs for the first time. They say, quote, Admiral John Greenert, Chief of Naval Operations, said that as long as women meet the requisite standards and pass the rigorous training, they should be granted the opportunity to join the Navy's most elite teams. Quote, why should anybody who can meet these standards be accepted? Anybody who can meet these standards be accepted? And the answer is, there is no reason. Greenert said that to Defense News. Quote, so we're on track to say, hey, look, anybody who can meet these gender non-specific standards, then you can become a Navy SEAL. The announcement opening Navy SEALs to women comes one day after the Army said that for the first time, two women will graduate from the Army's prestigious Ranger School, a training program that prepares soldiers for frontline combat roles. If you meet the standards that we've established, then you should be able to perform in that military occupational specialty. And I think that's where we're headed. That was outgoing Army Chief of Staff Ray Odierno, who said that last week. So let's break this down a little bit here. I think that makes perfect sense. And let's dig deeper and let's be totally objective. At the same time, let's understand that it's probably true that fewer women will apply for it and fewer women will meet the physical standards than men. So I'm against, you know, any kind of like quota system or anything like that, but that's not what this is. Okay, and as long as that's the case, as long as we keep the standards the same, yeah, then I'm 100% for it. Why not allow women in there? And the best evidence for this, by the way, is the fact that there's an all-female Kurdish fighting force which is kicking ISIS's ass. We covered the story a while ago. The video actually got many, many views. And there's an extra layer of silliness on top of it, too, because ISIS fighters are afraid that if they get killed by a woman instead of a man that they'll go to hell or there's some punishment in the afterlife or something like that. So they're even more scared of the Kurdish female fighters than anybody else, which is awesome. So the bottom line is, man, and hopefully we can all agree to this, as long as they don't change the standards and as long as the women who become part of the team meet the standards, well, then I don't see any reason to be against it. There's no logical reason to oppose it if they meet the standards and they can do the job. Okay. We cruising, son. All right, we're almost done here. Actually, that's not true. We got like 4 or 5 more stories. All right, e-cigarettes. Here we go. Public Health England conducted a study on e-cigarettes, and they found some really promising results. They say the following, quote, e-cigarettes should be prescribed to smokers to help them quit the habit. vaping, which is what it's called, electronic cigarettes, was 95% less dangerous than smoking traditional tobacco cigarettes. The battery-powered devices, which simulate the feeling of smoking but with nicotine inhaled in a vapor, could be a game-changer in public health, according to the study co-author Professor Anne McNeil of King's College London. Smoking is the leading cause of preventable deaths in England, accounting for over 80,000 a year, according to the National Health Service. So to give you some more numbers on that, listen to this, man. In the U.S., tobacco kills over 400,000 people every single year. That's amazing. Imagine for a second if terrorists killed that many people in America. We would invade roughly 60 countries. But when it's tobacco that kills 400,000, we're like, oh, what, it happens over time? Well, then I guess we shouldn't care about it. No, you should still probably care about it. And in the world, so worldwide, tobacco kills 6 million people annually. 6 million. Now, you guys know me. I'm not in favor. I hate bans. Bans, I think, should be rarely implemented, in my opinion. But I do like efficient, intelligent regulation. So if we're talking about cigarettes, should the government ban some of the hundreds of chemicals that are in cigarettes that are carcinogenic? Yes, yes, they should. You should make them, you know, less dangerous as you can, given what they are. And then it should be all the individual's choice. If they want to kill themselves, go ahead, you can kill yourself. But at least let's have some rational, rules in place which make it so that the worst of the worst of the carcinogens aren't in the cigarettes and you don't die at age 36 or something like that. Okay, so now that that's clear, let's dig into this e-cigarette issue a little further here, because there's a lot to discuss. So I've seen other studies that say, no, they're just as bad. Now, I'm always skeptical of those studies because usually who's funding it on the low? Probably a cigarette company. Don't worry, don't do the electric ones. Still buy ours because we make money off of it. So I do think it's the case that those are probably more likely to be fudged. In this case, like I told you, it's Public Health England. It's a government body that did the study, and they're like, no, it is better. Now, that doesn't mean that they're perfect because, you know, for example, there's some questions that arise as to exactly how the vapor is produced and how it mixes with oftentimes the plastic that's used in the casing for the cigarette. And, you know, I don't know if it was formaldehyde or something else that is created in low quantities in some of these e-cigarettes. And so there are still issues, no question about it. But at face value, just using logic here, if you look at what's in cigarettes versus what's in e-cigarettes, there's no doubt e-cigarettes are significantly better for you. Doesn't mean they're good for you. Doesn't mean there aren't some downsides. It just means they're better for you. By the way, another thing they say, some of them are poorly made, and they've, like, exploded. Got to fix that problem. And now it's super, super rare. 0.00001% of them have exploded. But still, it's an issue, and it should be addressed because people are going to be like, oh, I don't want to buy it. Maybe it'll happen to me. So they say 95%, man, 95% less dangerous because all you have in the e-cigarette is the vapor and nicotine. Now, nicotine, some people think that's a carcinogen. Wrong. It's actually not true that nicotine is a carcinogen. There are some studies that say nicotine has positive effects. It's like a little bit of a stimulant, and it gives you a little jolt of energy, and some people think better as when they take a little bit of nicotine. So nicotine isn't the problem with cigarettes. It's the other however many 800, 900 chemicals that are part of it that are carcinogenic, the tar and all the nonsense, the chemicals that are put in it after the fact. So that's the problem with the cigarettes. So at face value alone, you have the cigarettes with hundreds of chemicals and the nicotine and the tobacco. That's really fucking bad for you, and the evidence is there. For e-cigarettes, the jury's still out, and at face value, it appears as if it really can't be worse. It can certainly be better, even according to this study, because there's just not as much shit in the thing that you're smoking. And finally, let me just say this. I used e-cigarettes. It actually worked for me. Now, the funny thing is, when I started using them, I didn't use them as, like, I wasn't planning on smoking e-cigarettes specifically to quit. I just thought, let me smoke e-cigarettes instead, because it appears like they're slightly better than cigarettes. And what happened? So I smoked for, I don't even know how long, maybe 5-6 years of my life, something like that. Then I switched to e-cigarettes, And what happened is I used them for maybe 4 or 5 months, and I just got too lazy to keep going to buy them. So I don't buy cigarettes, and I don't buy e-cigarettes anymore. Smoke anymore. So I'm actually a success story, and e-cigarettes really did help me. Now, some people it's not going to work, and some people are different than me. No denying that. But I always said that when I smoked an e-cigarette, it gave me, you know, 60 to 80% of the sensation that I needed or that I thought I needed at the time from a normal cigarette. So, it quelled the sensation and the urge just enough for me to say, oh, I don't need a cigarette. I can just smoke the e-cigarette. And still, you know, every once in a while, rarely I'd have a regular cigarette when I was smoking the e-cigarette, but they became fewer and far between, and then it was purely the e-cigarette, and then I was done completely with all of it. So this study says, yes, they're better. Use them. My anecdotal personal story is, yes, they're better. I used it, and I accidentally quit, right? So my overall takeaway, on the question is, if you're considering using e-cigarettes to then try and quit, or you're just considering switching from cigarettes to e-cigarettes and staying with e-cigarettes, I would say absolutely do it. It's certainly not nearly as dangerous or bad for you as regular cigarettes. Okay, next. All right. Sorry, let's see. Okay, sorry. Human brain. We got to talk about lab-grown brains. Scientists at Ohio State University say they've grown the first near-complete human brain in a lab. So it's now official. We're living in a sci-fi movie. We're living in the future. This is the same thing like when we talk about climate change, how I now say, no, stop talking about it as if it's something that's going to happen in the future, somewhere out there far, far away. No, it's happening right now. We're seeing the effects of it right now. Same thing with this, with technology. We're just living in the future. There was another article I saw, I think it was yesterday, where it was like a robot running in the woods. And it's just creepy, man. They have like human-like robots now. Dog-like robots, like mechanical dogs that move like dogs, you're like, what the fuck am I looking at? And it's progressing so fast, it's like exponentially fast. And I don't know how to respond to it. Part of me is like, oh, sweet. But the other part of me is like, oh, where's this going to end, dog? I don't know. I don't want to get conspiratorial. I don't want to pretend like I know shit I don't know because I don't know anything about this. But there is like a gut feeling that I have, and I think many people have, where we're like, where's this going to end up? Nobody's more pro-science, nobody's more pro-technology than me, but that doesn't mean there aren't possible downsides. I mean, if we're not careful enough, it could be that we use science and technology to create some sort of weapon that could wipe out hundreds of thousands or millions of people in a second. Oh, we already did that? Oh, okay. So Huffington Post reports on this. They say, the brain organoid, nice word, if licensed for commercial lab use, could help speed research for neurological diseases and disorders like Alzheimer's and autism. The brain, engineered from adult human skin cells and grown in a dish for 15 weeks, is about the size of a pencil eraser. It has the maturity of a 5-week-old fetal brain and contains 99% of the genes in a fully developed human fetal brain. They say there's no ethical concerns in this case because, quote, we don't have any sensory stimuli entering the brain. This brain is not thinking in any way. Yeah, I believe them because they're scientists and they're smarter than me, but come on, we can't deny it. This is getting creepy. This is getting creepy as fuck. Now, again, it's necessary because what they're doing is they're trying to cure Alzheimer's and autism, and they go on to say it could also help for PTSD, it could also help for other psychological symptoms and issues, and here's how. So I'm for it, but make no mistake about it, it's just starting to look weird. It's starting to feel like we're in some sort of sci-fi novel, and you and I are just along for the ride. So let's see where it ends up. Okay, and two more stories. We might finish like 2 minutes early today. Yippee skippy! All right. Let's get to other new findings. I got a lot of science in today's show. I didn't even realize that until right now. The AFP is reporting on a new scientific finding that I view as strangely ironic, and I'll explain why later. They say, quote, a mass grave containing at least 26 human skeletons discovered in Germany shows that conflict in Neolithic Europe some 7,000 years ago could be horrifically brutal, with victims tortured and mutilated. They continue, the discovery adds fresh evidence to the theory that mass violence played a crucial role at the beginning of the Neolithic era. Evidence to date suggests that massacres of entire communities were not isolated occurrences, but were rather frequent. The skulls of many of the skeletons were smashed in by violent blows, in addition to arrow injuries that may have killed or immobilized the victims. Unique to the new site is the discovery of skeletons with significant trauma in their lower legs, indicating that they were tortured or mutilated before or after death. The study speculates that a clash over resources, possibly exacerbated by drought, could have sparked conflict between groups. Okay, so, why did I say this is ironic? Do I even need to give my reasoning here? You should already see it. They keep talking about violence in the past tense. Like, oh, come on, primitive humans. These motherfuckers were savages. Do you see what they did to each other? Yeah. Did you see the CIA report, which was just released? Again, I don't, like, it's hilarious to me that obviously the people who wrote the article are smart people. Obviously the researchers and the scientists involved are smart people. But they're, like, dinging it up, and they're like, oh, sweet Jesus. These guys did war. They did fighting and torture. I'm appalled. As if today we have it all figured out. They came up with a new form of torture recently. The CIA did. I got news for everybody listening to this. Anal feeding is not a thing. I love how they said it on the news as if it was like some thing that's existed forever. They're like, well, yeah, see, the CIA engaged in anal feeding when the people wouldn't eat their food. Whoa, 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 whoa. When you talk to experts, they're like, anal feeding is not real. It's not a thing that people do. So what did they really do? Anally raped prisoners with a tube and shoved liquid food up there. It led to blisters and lesions and internal bleeding and all these problems. They anally raped people and then shoved food up there. That's insanity. And the amount of liquid food that was up there, in all seriousness, is probably even worse than just flat out raping them. It's a crazy thing to say, but it's true. No, no. Come on, man. Come on. This is insane. So we did that. We did sleep deprivation. We did mock burials. We did hypothermia torture where people died. We said certain people told prisoners, I'm going to rape your mom. I'm going to rape your sister. I'm going to kill your family. We did all this stuff. We implemented physical pain on people. Of course we did. And this is America today. The people who say, oh, the beacon of hope and freedom. But understand, like, I don't even just want to single out the Americans today on this. But guess what? It's not like there are not other regimes that are doing torture and doing war. Of course there are. If you dig up evidence, you know, however many years in the future, let's say humans somehow get down to a very tiny, there's only a couple humans left, and then somehow we rebound, and all the evidence of today is gone for a long time, and they're doing archaeology way out in the future, and they find, you know, sites from Syria or Iraq today. You know what they'll find? Mass graves. From ISIS beheading people and killing people. And what are they going to say then? Woo! Back then, oh, these humans, these primitive humans, oh, they're so violent, so violent. Yeah, we've been violent all along. Now understand, is it true that when you look at all the data, there's an argument to be made that, well, the violence has decreased for this reason and that reason, and if you look at it this way, it's a little bit better, so keep that in perspective. Absolutely, I'm not denying that, and who is it? Steven Pinker, is it? A guy who's way more intelligent than me is a guy who argues this, so far be it from me to say he's wrong. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is I find it hilarious that we have this tone of condescension, as if, like, we figured it all out, and them, I mean, they did torture and war. Us today, we don't do that. even though we invaded Iraq in 2003, it was an offensive war against a country that didn't attack us. We invaded Afghanistan. We're still in Afghanistan, even though we defeated Al-Qaeda, and we said that was the reason to go in there. We're doing drone strikes in Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia. As of right now, putting America aside, we got a war going on in South Sudan. We got a war going on in the Congo. We have how many countries that have implemented Sharia, which is basically a war on your own population if you're going to fucking behead people for being gay and you're going to kill people for kill a woman for showing her face or whatever the case is. Yes, we're still very, 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 very violent, and this is an unearned tone of condescension. I'm sure they were violent back then, but we also are today. And bottom line, and the whole point I'm doing this is, I want people to recognize that so we can stop being violent. Like, I want people to acknowledge how violent and terrible we are so we can stop doing that. We acknowledge the problem, we fix the problem, and we embrace an ideology of peace. We embrace an ideology of trying our absolute best to solve problems through negotiation and compromise, which some may say we do, and in theory they might be dedicated to that principle, but in practice we certainly are not. So we should try to go down that path. All right, and finally, last story of the day. Huffington Post has an incredible story about a gorilla named Coco, who's been trained by humans to do very human-like things. She's 44 years old, and she, quote, uses over 1,000 signs from American Sign Language to communicate and has gained a sophisticated understanding of spoken English through the help of a team of psychologists and researchers who have spent decades training her. So I'm already floored. That's amazing. Let's continue here and see what else they have to say. A new study is suggesting that the ape may be closer to verbal communication than we thought. Published last month in the journal Animal Cognition, the research finds that gorillas may be capable of complex vocal behavior that defies previous beliefs about their communicative abilities. Researchers analyzed 71 hours of video showing Coco interacting with the scientists who have trained her, discovering that she used 9 different learned behaviors that required some degree of control over her vocal ability and breathing. These behaviors included blowing a raspberry, which Coco did when she wanted to treat, playing wind instruments, mimicking a conversation by jabbering into a fake telephone, coughing on demand, and blowing her nose. They say Coco's behavior was voluntary and appears to be the result of living with humans throughout her life. So, that's absolutely fascinating. And we knew that gorillas and apes in general, monkeys, baboons, that they're pretty smart. But this is above and beyond what the scientists themselves thought not that long ago. So what's my overall takeaway from this story? My overall takeaway, it actually feeds into something which I've spoken about before on the show, which is the idea that in the nature versus nurture realm, there's no one clear winner. They're both true. They're both right. See, oftentimes it's polarizing, and some people say, typically on the left more, people say, it's all nurture. Everything is environment. Your mind is a blank slate. It's a lump of clay, and society and culture shapes it. And the right is more on the determinism front. And in that camp, and they say, no, everything is like genetic and biological, and, you know, you are what you are. If you're lazy, you're lazy, and you ain't going to get a goddamn job. You know the way they think, you know. They're more willing to discount environmental stuff and just say, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. I don't care if you're in a shitty situation. So, but I've always maintained from the beginning, both are true. It's not one or the other. Now, sometimes it is the case that it is one or the other. So there are plenty of issues where there are hardcore biological facts that are just scientific realities that are genetic, they're in your DNA, you're not going to override it, it is what it is. It, you know, you can't change it no matter how much you will yourself out of it. Sexuality is one of those things. If you're gay, you're gay. You're not just going to, you know, wish your way out of it. So that's nature. On the nurture front, you know, sometimes the things are purely nurture, right? I mean, it's almost purely nurture. The amount of money you end up making in a given economic system, because so much environmental stuff goes into it. Who do you know? Was nepotism involved? How were you raised? How were you trained when you were raised? Were you going to inherit your parents' business? Did you have to go to college to then try to get into a different field? There's so many external things going on that that's almost all nurture. But in this case, and in most cases, I think it's a mix of both. So there are hardcore limits. We're talking about a gorilla here. The gorilla is not going to be the next Stephen Hawking. It's just not going to happen. Hardcore genetic, biological, nature limits. But there's also the upside of nurture. When you raise the gorilla a certain way and you train the gorilla a certain way, the gorilla is going to have talents that other gorillas do not have. So the culture and the environment is also important. So my main takeaway from this, other than it being just absolutely fascinating at face value, is that in the nature versus nurture debate, it's true that I don't think either side wins. They're both true, and we should all take that balanced approach when looking at issues like that. I'm out of time, guys. I love you. I'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Mwah! Peace.